సంఘర్షదరిహ exaggeration in enjoying the bodily necessities of life. Realizing the true nature of the living entity, one should not move about in the world free from attachment. Realizing the true nature of the living entity, one should move about in the world free from attachment and steadfast in purpose. Responsively, please. Therefore, one should not view death with horror, nor have recourse to defining the body as the soul. Nor give way to exaggeration in enjoying the bodily necessities of life. Realizing the true nature of the living entity, one should move about in the world free from attachment and steadfast in purpose. So there's two interesting words that I find interesting in the transliteration, the way that Srila Prabhupada translated them. The first is tasmat, because generally tasmat means therefore, but here we see that Srila Prabhupada translated it as meaning on account of death. So obviously, in the previous verse, it talks about how the jiva, when he starts to identify with the body, how this transition of, you know, the transition of the body, he's identifying with this. This is actually the birth and the death. Because he's identified with the body, therefore he takes birth, therefore he dies. And then also, Prabhupada discusses, or mentions here in the transliteration, this word sambrahma as being eagerness, material gain. So this is two words. Sam or samyak means like completely or fully or perfectly, and brahma generally means misery or illusion. So when a person's illusion is complete or when it's perfect, that illusion is perfect, they develop this eagerness to material gain. So that illusion means accepting the body as a self. And this chapter is quite an interesting chapter, it's a very important chapter in the Bhagavatam. Starting with the very first verse, interesting statistic, Srila Prabhupada quotes the first verse of this chapter 250 times, just to give you an idea of how important this chapter is. And that's Kapanya Dosha, Kamana Deva Netvena Janda Deha Pata, Sriya Vrishta Udram, Pung Shareka Panashaya. So Kapila Deva is describing his mother the process whereby the jiva enters into a body. Through the particle of male semen, because of his activities. His activities determine where he's going to go. Because of his activities, his attachment for this material body increases. His attachment to take on another material body is generated, or this situation where he takes on another material body is generated. So, this whole chapter, Kapila Dev is discussing, he sort of begins by saying, well, the living entity enters into your body because of his attachment and under the guidance of the divine. It's not a random thing. It's not like the living entity goes and chooses which body he wants or anything. No, because of the living entity's activities, the supreme, this is Daiva Netrina, under the supervision of the divine, the jiva is given a particular type of body which is just suitable for his activities, which is just suitable for his consciousness to live out his life. And then we see that Kapila Dev describes in the following, around about 35 verses, I think, the suffering that a living entity experiences due to taking on a material body. And beginning with, as he says, he's pushed into the womb through a particle of semen. So it begins, the suffering begins right from the womb. It's a very difficult situation, living in these suffering, so many miseries in the womb, being attacked by worms, being burnt by the fire of the mother's stomach, etc., etc. Such a horrible condition of life. And then the living entity comes out. And Kapila describes here how one who's very fortunate, a living entity who's very fortunate within the womb, is able to think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But that's a rare situation, it's not common. And even if the jiva in the womb is thinking of Krishna, due to the pain of birth, he forgets all about that. And he comes into this world and just cries and screams like everyone else. It's a very, very rare thing that a living entity will enter into this world and be God conscious. So it's very contrasting with the common, the materialistic perception of birth and all these sort of things, because generally we find that materialistic people think that this process of birth is a very wonderful, very beautiful thing. Whereas the scriptures give a completely different perception of that. And you see, this section here is called Samkhya. Kapila Dev is giving Samkhya Yoga. And according to the Nirukti Dictionary, it describes Samkhya as explaining something in detail. A detailed description. And then Prabhupada, he points out that particularly, philosophy pertaining to the body and the soul inside the body. So, very clearly describing what's the difference. And we see that's what Kapila Dev is describing. He's very clearly describing the difference between the body and the soul. And when one identifies with the body, the suffering that he's forced to go through, and this illusion, as the jiva, maya, vihiti, jnana, covered by illusion, he thinks that I am this body, and this is a very wonderful situation. But generally we find that in this world, the living entity is forced to experience so many difficult situations. And as we see that this chapter is going through the whole progression of how the jiva in the womb is experiencing so much suffering, when the jiva is born, you know, the very painful situation. Anyone who's actually seen childbirth with a bit of an objective view doesn't really want to go through that experience again. When my daughter was born, I was present, and I saw the whole situation. I thought it was a very, you know, for the child, it was a very, very difficult situation. For the mother, it was a very difficult situation. And, you know, even though some devotees were encouraging, oh, no, you shouldn't see this, it'll shorten your life, things like that. And I looked at it in a different way, and I thought, this is a very interesting experience for me, because I can actually see what, you know, birth and death are all about. You know, I can actually see the difficulty of birth, you know, the difficulty the child goes through, the difficulty the mother goes through, the difficulty the father goes through, and they have to raise the child. I was speaking with a devotee yesterday, and he was relating to my wife and myself about the joys of raising children, but also the difficulty of raising children. So it's kind of like, you know, a bit like sand in the sweet rice. There is some sweetness there, but also there's difficulty. You know, there's so much anxiety about whether the child will grow up, you know, if it's playing on the road, will it get run over by a car, you know, when they get older, will they take drugs, will they fall into the wrong association, etc., etc. So much anxiety is there. And then, you know, the same thing is when it comes to the point of death, you know, it's such a difficult situation when one dies, you know. Yet we see now in these verses, because the very first verse says, Tasmat, therefore, understanding all this situation, understanding this, is connecting this verse to the previous verses, and particularly the discussion that's gone in this chapter. Therefore, understanding the difficulty in this life, don't become attached. In the last sentence here, it says, realizing the true nature of the living entity, one should move about in the world free from attachment and steadfast in purpose. So this often happens, that we see this type of situation often happens in the Bhagavatam, where the speaker will describe, you know, a very difficult situation, a very unpleasant situation of the jiva who's attached to material nature, attached to sense gratification, how they suffer so much due to that attachment. You know, because in a way, you know, when one's attached to enjoying the senses, then one's always looking for ways to bring the senses into contact with the objects. And this causes anxiety, this causes hankering. And then often we see, just like, you know, we're talking about children, you see with children, when you remove the object of enjoyment, instantly you see they become distressed, they become disturbed. Children are very interesting to observe, because, you know, it's not like they're shy about expressing their emotions. Generally they just let it all out straight away. You know, they'll let anger, they'll let happiness, whatever, they'll let it out quite quickly. So when you remove something of enjoyment from a child for some reason, then you see very quickly the child reacts to that. You see, and it's the nature for people in this world who are attached to sense gratification that this brings about suffering. Rishabdev, in the fifth chapter, the fifth canto, he points out, it says, Nunam pramatta purute karma, yadin vriyaya kutaya akrinoti, na sadhu manya yata akrinoya, asham asakrishna ashtivaya. You know, like when the living entity thinks that sense gratification is the end of life, that this causes him to take on material bodies. But actually, he says, na sadhu mane, this is mane, I think, na sadhu. This is, it's interesting, again, Prabhupada, he translates this word sadhu, is this befitting. But sadhu is generally translated as being an intelligent person or a saintly person. So then we see in the translation, Prabhupada brings out both these translations of the word. He says, na sadhu manye. He says, I think, the Rishabh is saying, I think it's not befitting an intelligent man to get engaged in these things, you know, by which he perpetually receives one body after the next. Because actually, the living entity should not take on a material body. This is not our constitutional position. Our constitutional position is to have a spiritual body. This is the nature of the jiva. Yet we see that, and this is being pointed out by Kapila Devi, and we see in so many places in the Bhagavatam, how it's pointed out, that through cultivating this material attachment, through cultivating, you know, this enjoyment through the senses, through the body, this forces one to go through the cycle of birth and death. And that's what Kapila Devi is discussing here. how the jiva is forced. And then he's giving this very graphic description of the suffering that the living entity experiences due to having a material body. And then he says here, but you shouldn't have horror, you know, seeing this description. You should understand that this is what comes because of our activities. Because we, you know, it's just like, you know, if you stick your finger in the fan, don't be surprised that you get hurt, because that's what happens. You know, it's like if you expose yourself, you know, to a dangerous situation. You know, like someone sent me a video link a couple of years ago, and it was these people, snowboarding, and they stand on this single board and they ski down the slopes, and so they were doing jumps across the road, right? It was a busy mountain road, you know, and they're doing these jumps across the road. Then this truck comes along, you know, and they're sitting there jumping, bang! One of them just bounces off the front of the truck, and like people were all shocked, horror. But I mean. Even though they're seeing it, you know, every single day they're seeing that people are suffering, they're seeing that people are entering into the abode of death. Even though seeing, not pashati, they don't see. And Prabhupada often say, hope against hope. It's like they're just hoping that, okay, this person's not enjoying, but I'll enjoy. And we see that people make so much endeavor to try to enjoy in situations where no one else has enjoyed. You know, they're all suffering. And yet they're thinking they're going to get some enjoyment out. And this is just absolute foolishness, really. Because there's so much evidence there of how people are experiencing so much difficulty. Yet they're thinking, hope against hope, that no, it'll be different for me. I'll get that enjoyment. This is false promise. I was listening to a class the other day, and Prabhupada was talking about the two potencies of Maya. And he talks about Avaranatmika Shakti, how it covers over the living entity, covers over their intelligence, so that they're thinking that I'll actually enjoy this. But actually we see that no one is actually enjoying this. We see that everyone is experiencing difficulty in this material world. So I'll read the short paragraph. The same person who has understood the philosophy of life and death is very upset upon hearing of the horrible hellish condition of life in the womb of the mother, or outside of the mother. So not just in the womb, but also at birth. Because we see children, you know, that young children, generally babies, that they spend a lot of time crying. Why? Because they're experiencing some misery. Prabhupada talks about how they're experiencing an itch, and they don't know how to scratch it, they can't scratch it. They're trying to communicate to their mother, to the others, that, well, I have this problem, please do something. You know, or they have to, you know, pass stool, and they, like these days it's very common, people put nappies on the child, so they pass urine, they pass stool, they have to sit in it. Very horrible condition of life. And the problem is they can't communicate. They can't tell anyone what's happening for them. And so they're suffering greatly in a very difficult situation. The same man should understand the miserable condition of this material body. Without being unnecessarily upset, he should try to find out if there is a remedy. And again, Prabhupada says the same man. Again, interesting, because sometimes people argue to you, but actually no, I'm enjoying this material world. So we can see Prabhupada's explaining quite clearly here the situation. The sane man understands, an insane man doesn't understand. They're crazy. Nunam pramatta, they're mad, trying to enjoy the material world. The remedial measure can be understood when one associates with persons who are liberated. It must be understood who is actually liberated. The liberated person is described in the Bhagavad Gita, one who engages in uninterrupted devotional service to the Lord, having surpassed the stringent laws of material nature, is understood to be situated in Brahman. And that's the verse, Manam Chayol Vyavashara. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, so here Prabhupada is saying, you know, to associate with liberated persons, that will enable us to overcome to this situation, if you like, or you know, become free from the conditioning and knowledge of your nature. Then the next paragraph, Prabhupada seems to be saying that if you don't have this association, then the next thing is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is beyond the material creation. It is admitted, even by impersonalists like Sankaracharya, that Narayan is transcendental to this material nature. As such, when one actually engages in the service of the Lord in various forms, either Narayan or Radha Krishna or Sita Ram, he is understood to be on the platform of liberation. The Bhagavatam also confirms that liberation means to be situated in one's constitutional position. Since the living entity is eternally the servitor of the Supreme Lord, when one seriously and sincerely engages in the transcendental loving service of the Lord, he is situated in the position of liberation. One should try to associate with a liberated person, and then the problems of life, namely birth, death, can be solved. So, a very interesting statement that Srila Prabhupada's making here. Obviously, you know, I have some bias in this regard, but it seems to me that Prabhupada is very specifically talking about deity worship here, and saying that if one sincerely and seriously engages in deity worship, then they're situated in the liberated condition. There's an interesting letter that Prabhupada wrote. I can't remember who it was. Anyway, in this letter, Srila Prabhupada is saying that he's talking about Achan Siddhi, and that if one achieves perfection, Achan Siddhi means if one achieves perfection through the process of deity worship. And Srila, I remember having this conversation with Janayasuru some time ago, that Srila Prabhupada seems to be indicating there that if one achieves perfection through the process of deity worship, then at the end of this life, you go directly back home to Godhead. So, Prabhupada seems to be supporting that statement here in this purport, where he's saying that if one engages in the service of the Lord in various forms, either Narayana, Raya, Krishna, or Sita Ram, he's understood to be on the platform of liberation. So when one is liberated, he can like a member of the Godhead. So by engaging in the service of the deity and taking the process very seriously, we see that sometimes devotees, they don't actually take the process so seriously, they don't actually have this understanding that they're dealing with Krishna directly. Then they don't really get the benefit of it. But if devotees understand this and seriously take the process of deity worship, then they get the full benefit. And they themselves become liberated through associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in this way. And we see there's many, many nice examples of that in Shastra of devotees who have taken the deity form, accepted the deity form of the Lord to be Krishna directly. This is the statement is there in the Chaitanya Charamrita, in the story of Sakshi Gopal, Patima Natumi Shaksha Pujendanamana, the Brahmani prays to Lord Krishna, he says, my dear Lord, you're not a statue, you're directly the son of Nanda Raj. You know, there's a story of Raghunandan Thakur, the story of Vidoy Chaitanya, so many different personalities. They accepted that Krishna was directly the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And we see how Krishna, therefore, directly engaged in activities with him. They're experiencing Krishna's pastimes directly. And there's a very interesting class that Prabhupada gave in Los Angeles when he installed a small brass Radha Krishna deity set, looking at Gopana. And then towards the end of that class, Srila Prabhupada was describing the mood of a worshipper. And then Srila Prabhupada, he said that if one is able to serve Krishna this way, then one day the deity will talk to you, one day the deity will dance for you. So Prabhupada is saying that it's possible to have a direct exchange with Krishna, not something that's just like in the mind or in the heart or something that's very sort of like, nebulous or anything, something that's a bit theoretical, but actually one can have a direct, tangible, a real exchange with Krishna. And the process of deity worship, the process of devotional service actually opens us up to that opportunity where we can have a direct exchange with Krishna. We see so many of our acharyas, so many great devotees have had these direct exchanges with Krishna where they've actually been talking with Krishna. And it's not something that's theoretical, it's practical, it's real. And the process of devotional service enables us to have that real exchange with Krishna. And that's, in my mind, this is what Srila Prabhupada is talking about here, is how through deity worship one can actually have this direct connection with Krishna. I'll finish the purport. While discharging devotional service in full Krishna consciousness one should not be miserly. He should not unnecessarily show that he has renounced the world. Actually, renunciation is not possible. If one renounces his palatial building and goes to a forest, there is actually no renunciation. Interesting point, Prabhupada. For the palatial building is the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the forest is also the property of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If he changes from one property to another, that does not mean that he renounces. He was never the proprietor of either the palace or the forest. Renunciation necessitates renouncing the false understanding that one can lord it over material nature. See, this is the very thing that causes the jiva to take birth and experience death, is this false attachment. And this is pointed out by Krishna in the Gita, Purushara Prakriyasthi, Bhakti Prakriyajangaram, Karanam Gunasamvasa, Sada Sajjana Jamasa. Because the jiva is trying to lord over matter, therefore, Sada Sajjana Jamasa, he meets with various auspicious and inauspicious births. So one has to give up this concept of lording over matter and just accept that Krishna's propriety. Once we can actually take that in fact, then we won't be forced to take birth or death. When one renounces his false attitude and renounces the puffed up position that he is also God, that is real renunciation. Otherwise, there is no meaning of renunciation. Rupa Goswami advises that if one renounces anything which could be applied in the service of the Lord and does not use it for that purpose, that is called falgu vairagya, insufficient for false renunciation. Everything belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, everything can be engaged in the service of the Lord. Nothing should be used for one's sense gratification. That is real renunciation. Nor should one unnecessarily increase the necessities of the body. We should be satisfied with whatever is offered and supplied by Krishna without much personal endeavor. We should spend our time executing devotional service in Krishna consciousness. That is the solution to the problem of life and death. So Prabhupada here is clearly describing renunciation according to his own realizations and according to the understandings of Rupa Goswami and Rupa Acharyas. And we see that in Prabhupada's practical example, he had complete faith that Krishna would take care of him, that Krishna would provide all the necessities of life. And he just endeavored very earnestly and very seriously for the satisfaction of Krishna. So by his personal example, by his teachings, etc., he's showing us how to live our lives. Now, at least I can speak from my own experience that, you know, I am attached to enjoying my senses now. I like to look at nice things, I like to hear nice sounds, I like to taste nice things, but not for the pleasure of Krishna, for the satisfaction of my senses. But then, you know, and I make endeavor to get these things. But then when I can develop this conviction that Krishna will take care of my needs, and we see Prabhupada's life, we see that he provided so much for him. And Prabhupada would give the example so often of how, like, you know, the elephants in the forest, in one mouthful they're eating so many kilograms of food. And do they have to make a big endeavor to get that food? Do they have to build a restaurant or anything? No, it's just there for them. They just go and they take it off the tree. And you know, we need to develop that faith, that kind of faith that Krishna will provide all our necessities without any great endeavor. And Prabhupada, you know, connecting this, saying that this is actually part of renunciation, is having faith that Krishna will provide all our necessities of life. And understanding that he is the proprietor, he is the controller, he is the enjoyer. Not that we're trying to do that ourselves. And when we can actually come to this realization, when we can start to act in this way, then this false bodily concept of life will gradually go away. Okay, so we'll finish there. Is there any questions, Rob? What's
the point? You mentioned the importance of meditating on the form they need to go on. And we also know that by chanting, by focusing on the name that gradually the form will manifest. Then we also have the Shilabhati Minotaku's writing, which is Harinam Chintamani. Therefore, you say So how can we, what is the proper understanding here? Is it depending on the active meditation of the soul, or will the soul actually manifest in its own time?
Did everyone hear the question? Prabhu Vasudev Guru was saying that, you know, because we were talking here about serving the form of the Lord, and then he was saying how, you know, chanting is the process, and you know, through chanting we can realize the form. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur says in the Harinam Chintamani that, you said it again? I don't remember. It's not an automatic progression, it's actually meditating upon the form, and then the form manifests. My understanding of it is that it's qualification. We need to be purified in order to be able to do these various stages of devotional service. And in the Madhya Lila, chapter 15, it's interesting because I was just speaking about this verse yesterday in class in school. Madhya Lila, chapter 15, text 1-8, Prabhupada quotes from Jiva Goswami's Bhakti Sandarbha. And there Jiva Goswami is explaining, he says, yes, the opinion of Srimad Bhagavatam that the chanting of Hare Krishna is the process of this age, and deity worship is not actually necessary. And that one can achieve perfection by any of the nine processes of pure devotion, Sutta, Shravana, Kirtan, Vishnu, etc. He says, however, as far as we've experienced, that all those candidates for initiation, they're so contaminated by the bones of material nature that they're not able to chant Hare Krishna. So they need the, he says, then called deity worship is essential. So, like, deity worship, it's not a process that's only for neophytes, but it's a process that's particularly good for neophytes because they can engage their external body, their senses, in direct service of Krishna. And generally with neophytes, well, it is with neophytes, they're very much on the external platform, they're very much on the platform of the body. So because that's our realization, that's our consciousness, therefore we need to connect that in devotional service in whatever way we can. Then as we progress in devotional service, we become more in the stage of the intellect and then more in the stage of the consciousness. So as we become more and more purified, the true nature of the self becomes more and more evident, and we're able to serve Krishna in that way. But in the beginning stages, we need to do it with our body because that's our consciousness. Is that... anything else? Shiva Ramaraj gave an interesting presentation to the GBC, I think it was 2 or maybe 3 years ago, about the stages of chanting and you know, what should be our meditation. Just like we hear, you know, Prabhupada gives class on Bhagavad Gita 7.1 quite often, and he focuses on those two words, touch chanu, just here. So Prabhupada would focus on that very much and say, you know, how you just here. And then so Shiva Ramaraj, he started from that point and he went through all the different progressions. How at the various stages of advancement in devotional service, there are different practices. You know, one's practice will change. Like a neophyte needs to practice in a particular way, so they become purified in that stage. But then, when it as becomes more and more advanced, their sadhana or their bhajan changes. One becomes more, you know, a very very advanced devotee can just sit down and meditate upon the pastimes of Krishna all day long, and be actually situated in Krishna's pastimes. But for someone who's a neophyte, they can't do that, even though they may pretend to do that. And there's a word for that, that's called praktika sahaja, where a neophyte imitates the activities of a very advanced devotee. So I felt like the correct answer to that question was that, you know, we need to practice devotional service according to our stage of advancement. So the one who's in a neophyte stage, they need to be very much engaged in external activities of devotional service, such as deity worship, such as book distribution, such as these activities that engage our body, you know, so that we become purified of this conception of being the body and actually realize that true nature. So I just, you know, it seemed that Prabhu was describing different stages of advancement. So I didn't see any conflict there. Saying that when we hear the holy name, we're chanting, we hear the holy name, that's on the level of samadhi. Yeah?
You understand? The equivalent of mind control.
There's the equivalent of samadhi. Yeah? And then these processes of. Oh, you got a microphone. Can you repeat that, please? Thank you.
When we can protect the hearing, when we are chanting and hearing, that the mind becomes controlled by that. It's just fixed on the sound vibration of Krishna's holy name. So that's equivalent to the yogic system of the Asanga yogic system when you come to the stage of samadhi. Mind control and absorption in the supreme. You're just absorbing the holy name. So that is your mind control. The hearing is your mind consent control. And then from that point, then the other professions will take the form will be revealed as qualities in the past. So, as you said, you can't jump, we shouldn't jump over. That'll be perfect for yourself.
Anything else?
I don't understand, you know, what the question actually is. Isn't the name of Krishna and the form supposed to be the same?
Yeah, definitely. The name and the form are the same. Yet it takes some degree of purification and advancement to actually perceive that directly. I mean, you know, we have the philosophy and we understand the philosophy, but to actually realize the philosophy, to actually live the philosophy, takes a degree of purification.
Wouldn't it be the same to hear the name and to meditate on the form?
Yeah, it is, but can we just sit down and meditate on the form 24 hours a day? We see, you know, great personalities like Rupa Goswami, Sanatana Goswami, etc. They were just absorbed in activities of Krishna consciousness 24 hours a day. We can't do that. Why? Because that's not our degree of advancement. We should not, you know, that's what we call premature transcendence. We should not think we're beyond the stage of advancement. We need to be real, very realistic about our stage of advancement and practice devotional service according to our stage of advancement. And then as we become more and more purified, then naturally we will just, you know, develop into more and more advanced stages of devotional service. Yet we need to be very cautious in our practice of devotional service, because if we try to go prematurely to more advanced stages, this is what our acharyas define as being for Krishna Sahajas. We're actually neophyte, we're thinking we're very advanced. We need to be careful to make sure that we're not. You know, and that's what we see, you know, this analysis given here by Kapila Dev. We also see that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur and Madhuri Padamini has given a very, very concise analysis of the stage of advancement devotional service. So we can understand where we are and practice devotional service according to our advancement and not go beyond that, not artificially go beyond that, because it will create havoc. And this is also pointed out by Rupa Goswami, he quotes from Narayana Pachavati, he says, Shuddhi Smriti Puranadi Pachavati Vindhina. I come back to one bhakti, utpataya yoga bhakti. He says that if one's practicing devotional service which is not according to shastra, utpataya yoga, it just causes disturbance. So we need to be very cautious about, you know, our practice of devotional service and not go beyond our capabilities. Of course, we must always be pushing ourselves to improve. You know, Tamal Krishna would just say, you know, constantly turn up the heat, just turn up the heat a little bit every day. But not artificially go beyond performing devotional service in a way we're not qualified for. Okay, thank you all very much.
I just want to just take 1 minute of your time. So if you know the occasion of 500th year of Lord Chaitanya's acceptance of sannyas, a Sankirtana Yatra is organized from Mayapur to Puri, and tomorrow is inauguration. The inauguration ceremony will take place during Bhagavatam class. So tomorrow there is, during the Bhagavatam class time, there will be combined class, English and Bengali together, in front of Pajitapa, there in the Pajitapa temple. And there will be some dignitaries from the different parts of India. Our Maharajas and Prabhus will be there. They will speak on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's sannyas exercise. There will be lighting of lamp and chanting of the Vedic mantras. And the special guest and guest of honors, they will also speak few words. And in that way, the auspicious time for inauguration is from 7:45 to 10 o'clock. But at the same time, the most auspicious time for devotees prasadam is also between 9 to 9:30. So our program will be limited for an hour and 15 minutes. We have to also observe the prasadam time. So please be available and pass this information to other people also, devotees, so that everyone should be here and encouraged and blessed with devotees. Those will be going out for a preaching program for 20 days. Hare Krishna. Thank you.